You forget little things. And I think we got it fixed now. Tonight, the home, parental duties. We've got a lot of little children here. A lot of parents and grandparents responsible for young souls that are growing up, being raised, and you have a hand in that. Most of the people here have a hand in that one way or another. So I figured this might be a good night to discuss it. We've got a couple of portions we'll look at. Part A, the home, being of divine origin. Being parents is a divine privilege. Having children, that divine trust that is yours, and their care being a divine duty. We'll discuss that in the first part. Then we'll move on to some parental duties. Start first with the home being of divine origin. You know, when we look back in Genesis at the creation, back at the very beginning, there was not a help meet suitable or comparable for Adam. So Eve was designed, formed from Adam's rib. And we get from there back to the New Testament in Matthew 19, verses 3 and 4. And the Pharisees are asking Jesus, hey, is it lawful to divorce, you know, your wife just for any reason? So what did Jesus do? He take them back to the Big Bang Theory? Did he take them back to evolving from monkeys or apes? What beginning did Jesus take them back to? In the beginning, have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female. For this reason, a man shall leave his father and mother, cleave to his wife, and the two shall be one flesh. The home is of divine origin. And we have divine authority of which our homes are to operate under. You know, with the church, when you look at Acts 2 and Isaiah 2 and other scriptures, the church is of divine origin as well. We can show that. Is this microphone working? Okay. I see the smiles. Thank you. Well, the church is under, is of divine origin and under divine authority as well, just as our homes are. The church is subject unto Christ. Why? Because he's the author of it, right? He's the former founder of it. Well, our homes, God founded our home too. You know, some folks say, well, you know, I'm the man of the house. I'm the leader. We're just going to operate as we see fit. They're going to do what I say. Well, we do have divine authority, though. The elders here in the local church, I mean, there are leaders here, watchers over the flock and of souls, right? Do they dare operate outside of divine authority? No way in this world. The very reason we're here tonight. We preach, we teach, we pray, we sing, right? We're here tonight under that very divine authority. Well, the same is true for the home. Being a parent is a divine privilege. Psalm 127, here's how I know that. Psalm 127, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward, like arrows in the hand of a warrior. So are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. When you look at your children, do you view them as being a heritage of the Lord? Be honest now. Because we should. They are, according to the psalmist. Psalm 128, the very next chapter, your wife shall be like a fruitful vine in the very heart of your house, your children like olive plants all around your table. That creates a nice picture. Some say, well, it's not just that simple. Well, you know, I didn't say it's a divine pleasure, right? But it is definitely a divine privilege that is ours with our homes. And we're to take great care of it. And being a parent, looking here in Genesis 33, when Jacob and Esau meet. Esau ran to him to meet him, embraced him, fell on his neck, kissed him. They cried together. Esau lifted his eyes and he sees the women and children. He says, "Who are these with you? Who are they?" Jacob said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." When you look at your children, do you look at them as the children whom God has graciously given you? Because he has. That's what Jacob said to Esau. Now later, Genesis 48, after being separated for decades, Jacob reunited with Joseph. You know the story. Joseph now, second command, all the land of Egypt. Jacob gets a chance to bless Joseph's sons, and he saw Joseph's sons, and he asked, "Whose are these?" And what's Joseph's response here? "They are my sons whom God has given me in this place." When you look at your children, are they your daughters whom God has given you in this place? Is that how you look at your children? Or are they ankle biters? Rugrats? Go watch the TV. I'm busy. No, being a parent is a divine privilege for us. When we look at that and we think about it, some people, just like a millstone around your neck, dragging me down. Had to put my career on hold. Can't do what I want to do. Those vacations we always dreamed about, now we got kids. Right? And even members of the church. You know, when you're dating, the question is, when do you get married? The minute you get married, when are you having kids? And the minute you let people know when you're having kids, just wait till they can walk. Just wait till they can talk. Just wait till they become teenagers. You won't be able to do a thing with them. Members of the church have said that to me. I bet you've heard that all your life, haven't you? Somebody saying that to somebody else? Now, being a parent is a divine privilege. You're not just wiping runny noses, cleaning bottoms. Far more than that. They're a heritage of the Lord. Your children are. How do we look at it? Are you a parent that's fulfilling a God-ordained role? You are. Those children are divine trust. 2 Corinthians 12, and verse 14. The discussion here is not per se on the family relationship, but the latter part of the verse. For the children ought not to lay up for the parents, but the parents for the children. 1 Timothy 5:8. But if anyone doesn't provide for his own, and especially those of his household, he's denied the faith and he's worse than an unbeliever. You're not equivalent to an unbeliever. You're worse. Worse than an unbeliever. It is a divine trust that we've been given. Well, you know, it takes money. And, you know, we got dolls and we got baseball gloves and bats and helmets and cleats. And oh my goodness, registration fee, this and that. Well, that's part of it. That's part of the provision for our family, but it's so much more than that. It is. One example might be a friend of yours has the funds to do it and entrusts you, sets up a business, your dream of your lifetime. You got your building, your location, your supplies, cash for operating capital. You're ready to go. It starts tomorrow. You can be the next American dream, or you can just let it flail in the wind and die a death of its own. Starts tomorrow. You going to be there before the sun rises? You are, aren't you? Or are you just going to hang out and show up tomorrow afternoon? Kind of see what's going on. No, this is a divine trust that we've been given. And we should treat it as such. The care of those children is a divine duty. Genesis 18 and verse 19. Now the challenge I have for you here, this is the Lord talking about Abraham challenge I have for you here, put your name in that verse. Does it apply to you? Now, I can't just say this to you. I got to say this to Sean too, right? So the Lord talking about Abraham, for I've known him in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they keep the way of the Lord to do righteousness and justice. For I've known him. For I've known Sean Hafley. What's the verse going to say after that if I put my name in there? Put your name in there. What's the verse going to say? For Abraham, I've known him, in order that he may command his children and his household after him, that they may keep the way of the Lord. You know, we were told when our children were itty-bitty. Well, we got first grade. We knew all about that. I went to kindergarten, so we knew about that. Well, we got preschool and pre-preschool. And man, you need to think about this stuff when they're 2 and 3. Somebody's got to teach them social values, right? Somebody's got to teach them how to be sociable with people and develop some virtues. So I'm looking at the same group of people that's going to yank the Ten Commandments out of the schools, take the Bible away, can't mention the word God, don't have a prayer, and we're not going to talk about in the beginning God created. Right? Same group. Oh, no. No, no. Those are not the folks to teach your children. Sure not. Down here in Ephesians 6, verse 4, we'll bring this verse back up again. And it's a powerful one. And it should be a powerful one, because it's very easy as the daddy just to tell them, do what I said. And it's very easy to pick and knit and go after them and not stop, and they're powerless. You're the dad. Rather than that, bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. That's not just a weekend together. That's a daily thing. That's a conscious effort. Michael Malloy says, if you don't have a plan for your study, you ain't studying. I don't know if he says it exactly like that, but it's something similar. I don't remember the word ain't from him. But that's what this means. The care of our children are a divine duty. That home, a divine origin. This is part A. Being parents, divine privilege and divine trust of having those children. Let's talk about some of our duty. We're to love them, learn them, listen to them, laugh with them, lead them, limit them, leave them. Start first with love. Titus 2, verses 2 through 5, talking about the qualities of a sound church. Right? That the older men may be sober, reverent, temperate, sound in faith and love and patience. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things. That they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children, to be discreet, chaste, homemakers, good, right? Obedient to their husbands, that the word of God may not be blasphemed. What do you mean? You got to tell me how to love? You got to tell me to love my children? Yeah. That's what that's saying. Love your husband, love your children. You hear about the child that was left in the dumpster? Oh, you've heard stories like that before, haven't you? Don't know if it's the same one I'm talking about, but you've heard that, haven't you? Or the mother that straps her little kids in and goes, drives them in the lake, she swims to safety and lets them drown. Don't you scoff at being told to love your children. That's part of it for us. We are to love them. And love isn't just playing with them, getting down and messing around, having a good old time. It's more than that. It's discipline. Leadership, all these things that we'll go into here. 1 Corinthians 13 talks about what love is. Love suffers long and is kind. Love does not envy. Love does not parade itself. It is not puffed up. does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked. Love thinks no evil. Love does not rejoice in iniquity. It rejoices in truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. You ever been in a situation? Because I have. I don't work with a big old group of Christians. I don't know about you. But I've been in a situation, little kid comes in and says a cuss word and the whole room just erupts. Did you hear that? Oh, I love that little guy. No, you don't love that little guy. How do I know? Verse 6, love does not rejoice in iniquity. You're encouraging that kind of talk and behavior even before the child knows what it is? You don't love that child. And we're to love them. We're also to learn them. Well, you made a grammatical mistake. What do you mean? We're going to learn them a thing or two? No. You're to learn them. Know them. Talking about Eve's sons here. Genesis 4:2. She bore again, this time, brother Abel. Now, Abel was a keeper of the sheep, but Cain, a tiller of the ground. Well, so what? Well, that's so what? There are differences in these boys, right? We got to learn them. Genesis 25. Sons of Isaac and Rebekah, you've heard of these. Jacob and Esau, I'm quite certain. So the boys grew. Esau was a skillful hunter, man of the field, but what was Jacob? Mild man, dwelling in tents. You know which one of your children to give outside duties to? Which one to give inside duties to? You know how they are? That's part of it. You're learning them. You're knowing the difference. Their demeanor, their disposition. Math and science. Difficult for me, not quite as hard for my brother. Parents need to know that. A C for me might be a victory, but a B plus for my brother, shame, shame. Right? Should have had an A. But you got to know that difference, just like elders knowing the congregation. Our elders are involved in an awful lot to get to know us. Why? They're going to have to make judgments. They're going to have to make evaluations. They know this family here, what might bother them, where family X over here won't bother them a bit. But they need to know this. We need to know this about our kids, too. We've got to learn our children. You know, when I was growing up, you could tell me the rules, and that's great. Now I'm talking little bitty. I'm not talking now. Okay? But when I was little, and my parents are here, so I got to tell the truth on this one now. But you tell me, and I'm going to test it, and at some point, they have to come crashing down on me in order to get it across. You got to come crashing down on my type of personality when I was little. Now, my brother, Curtis, you just mentioned to him, hey, just a gentle reminder. You don't come crashing down on him, you might break him. He doesn't need crashing. I needed the crashing down for me to change. He just needed a gentle nudge, a little reminder. But we're not going to know that unless we know our children. We are to learn them. Next, listen to them. Luke 11. Jesus is making an address about something different, but he does mention, if the son asks for bread from any father among you, who will give him a stone? You going to just hand him a rock? Is that what you're going to do if he asks you for bread? Or if he asks you for a fish, what are you going to give him? A snake? A serpent instead? What if he asks you for an egg? You going to give him a scorpion? No way. No way. You listen to them. Psalm 103:13. Now, I don't know about you, but think about how you, as the father pities his children, how do you look at your children? So the Lord pities those who fear him. He looks at me in that loving way, and you in that loving way. You know, sometimes we take our children, and just like their music, We tune them out. Oh, no, sir. Well, we don't allow back talk in my house. We don't allow it in my house either. But you know, there's a difference between having a voice on something and having a vote on something. Now, my kids didn't get a vote on how they're going to be raised. And when we come into church, they didn't get a vote on that. Now, they have a voice. They may have something to add or clarify or ask. And I had better, as their father, be listening to them. Because I need to know. I need to know. And it takes time and attention at every stage. You know, a little child comes in. Yeah, we're not supposed to do this, are we, Daddy? Yes. But you're not listening. So you just give them an answer that's incongruous with what they're needing. You've got to pay attention. Listen to them. When they're 3, 4, and 5, and they come up and they're showing you something, or they're sharing something, or a drawing, or big scary monster under the bed that they saw the other day, right? And you're, wow! Because you'd better listen to them now. Because when they're teenagers, they're going to know. Do you listen to me or do you not? Well, she never listens to me. He never hears a word I say. Well, did you hear him when he was 3 or 4? See, that child already knows whether or not you're going to listen. They know it clearly. Laugh with them. Ecclesiastes 3 and verse 4. Time to weep, time to laugh, time to mourn, time to dance. Some people are so afraid to laugh with their kids. Well, I'm the one that enforces the law. How can I enforce the law if I'm laughing with them? Right? I'm the guy. Right? No, you got to laugh with them. Proverbs 15, verse 13. What does a merry heart make? Do you want your children to have a cheerful countenance? Do you? Laugh with them. But by sorrow of the heart, the spirit is broken. Pick your battles. Are you the one that's always the no-nonsense, law-enforcing, hands-on-hips, boy? What is it that went wrong this time? I don't see it, but I sense it. That's a mistake. That's a mistake. Pick your battles. Now, I personally had to learn a long time ago, because as a young father, it embarrassed me. We had people over one day, and a little girl, daughter of the family, that little brat, right? She grabbed the toy of Alyssa's. And Alyssa Marie, that is her middle name, and it said just like that. Alyssa went over to get that toy from that girl. Now, me as the father, young father, right? Young. Catch that? It embarrassed me. And I was too hard with Alyssa. And I demanded that she right the ship. And you know what? There was a teaching moment in there for her, but there was a larger teaching moment in there for me. Because for me, I needed to pick my battles. Right? Not everything they're going to do is going to lead to immediate physical or spiritual death. And I had to learn from that. And thank God I married Kim, because she's the one that brought it to me. So, laugh with them. You're going to have to watch their cartoons. Well, I don't like their cartoons. Too bad. You're going to need to spend some time with them. Right? Take the time to laugh. They'll have a cheerful countenance. They can have one. And you can be a part of that. Promoting that. Need to lead them. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he'll not depart from it. Train up a child. That doesn't say send her an email. Write something on the wall. Tell him to read it. Far more than that. And here we are back to fathers. Don't provoke your children, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord. Now, there are some things they need to be led in. Some things they can choose. But they're not choosing the diet for the family, right? Cookies and ice cream, chocolate candy bars, right? They don't get to choose that. What about their bedtime? Well, you are 7 now, 2nd grade. They say you're learning social skills and values and virtues. Fine, pick the bedtime. No, I don't do that. What about the school curriculum? Now, as you grow older, you do kind of get to pick and choose some of your subjects. But even at the college level, even at the PhD level, there is still a plan that you've got to go through, right? You don't get to pick that. There are just some ways and some areas that you need, your children need to be led. They need to be trained in spiritual matters too. You take a band, you get 50 people together. Kirsten, you can play the flute. Where's the maestro? You're on the piano, keyboard, right? And then we just show up at the football game and it's halftime. All right, y'all, get out there. Make it look pretty. Well, that's not going to work. No, we need to, it's going to take a lot of time. We've got people in here who have been in marching bands at the college level, and they'll tell you some of the most time and hardest hours they've ever spent has been with, you know, practices for the bands. They are. You got a job, you got a hobby that's keeping you from training your children? Don't let that be a sin to you. Lead them. Limit them. Dirk read a passage for us. 1 Samuel 3, verses 12 through 14. One of the great men of sacred antiquity, Eli, he had a problem. He had made a mistake. In that day I will perform against Eli all that I have spoken concerning his house from the beginning. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knows. What is that iniquity which he knows? He knew it. Don't play dumb and act like you don't know. He knew. Because his sons made themselves vile, and he did not restrain them. And therefore I have sworn to the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be atoned for by sacrifice or offering forever. Eli had a chance to limit his children. Believe it or not, your children crave limits. They need limits. They need structure for the sake of their security. And if you grew up in a house without limits, you know deep down I'm telling you the truth. Right? They need those limits. They've got to have them. Otherwise, you're going to rob your kids of wisdom. The rod and rebuke gives wisdom. You take that away from your kids, you're denying them godly and spiritual wisdom that they can develop while they're within your care. But a child left to himself brings shame to his mother. You want shame, mothers? Leave your child alone. Be upset when they're one or less and fussy and turn on SpongeBob and set them in front of it for 2 hours just to get them out of your hair. You want to bring shame? That's how you do it. That's how you do it. We need to limit them. Leave them. There's going to come a time, you know, in each family. And there's plenty of members here. Y'all have had children that have grown up. Kim and I grew up with them, knowing them. And it's time to go. I've taught you in the way of wisdom, right? I've led you in the right paths. And now it's time when you walk, your steps are not going to be hindered. When you run, you're not going to stumble. You've been taught. You've been given the tools that you need. In Luke 15, the parable of the lost son, the younger came to his father and he said, "Daddy, give me my portion. Let me have it. I'm ready." Now it doesn't say, but if there's a father that knows his son, does he know whether the son's ready for that portion in advance? Does he know? Does he have any clue? He knows. But it's time, and he divided him his livelihood to them. Sure did. Be a time to leave them. And when that time comes, talking to myself here too, we had better hope that we had done these things before we leave, before they go. Because they're to leave father and mother, cleave to the wife. This is going to have a big difference in our church. You want to know what the future of the church looks like? Really curious? You want to know what Bartlett's going to look like a generation from now? Look in our homes. Well, you know, children, they'll grow up, they go to college, they move on. Okay. I grant you that. I did that. But look in the homes. That's going to be the next generation. Tonight we haven't talked much about what we need to do to be saved. Paul was recounting what happened to him before he was Paul. He believed in Jesus as the Son of God and the Savior. He needed to obey the gospel and be baptized. He needed to repent of his sins. And Ananias told him, "Why are you waiting? Now why tarriest thou? Arise and be baptized, and wash away thy sins, calling on the name of the Lord." And if you've done that, but you've turned away in times past, this is the time to renounce your unrighteousness. Come to Christ on His terms. Do that tonight. Seek His forgiveness while we stand and sing.